Hey, listeners, let's take a moment for a shout out to our sponsor, Squarespace. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for creators to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create an awesome website, connect with your audience, and sell anything all in one place, all on your terms. Even if you don't know where to start with creating a website, Squarespace has you covered with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. Choose from professionally created layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people. Flexible payment options make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So, ready to get started? Head over to squarespace.com/gamescoop for a free trial. And when it's showtime, use our special promo code GAMESCOOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Now, let's dive back into GameScoop. One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. Come get some. Beware,
I live. IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me today, Justin Davis,
Scoop.
Vincent Genito,
Yo.
Brian Altano.
Brah!
We've got a great show for you today. So much to talk about. First, a little housekeeping. Next weekend is PAX East. Brian and I are going to be there.
That's right. I'm going to be there.
Vince is going to be there. We're going to be putting on a GameScoop panel on Sunday of PAX East. So if you're going there, come by, check us out, say hi. 12:30 p.m. on Sunday in the Arachnid Theater, I believe. We're going to be talking about Game of the Decade. As the 2010s are halfway over, we are contractually obligated to start the Game of the Decade watch.
Not literally, someone will shoot us if we don't fulfill that part of our contract.
Fair.
It's the Arachnid Theater?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Can't wait to go there.
Is that wrong?
No, no, it just sounds terrifying.
Can't wait to be in that place.
Full of spiders.
Yep.
Come join us in the fight against spiders. Live.
Come watch Vince go into an all-out panic attack. Yeah.
It sounds like you're on the spider's side. It's not a fight against them. It's a fight with them.
Yeah.
I want to kill them.
But that's next weekend. Let's focus on this.
I'm bummed I'm not going to be there.
This week. Come on, just come on, come.
Just come. Come kill spiders with us.
Top story this week. We found out that Batman Arkham Knight is rated M. Mm. Why is that a big deal?
I don't know. Probably because Batman's whole thing is that he doesn't kill people, and it's tough to imagine how much more violent those games can get without him, like, ripping someone's head off.
Yeah. I mean,
it doesn't have to be Batman committing the violence.
True. Mm-hmm. This is true.
It's possible that they just looked at the other recent Batman games and they're like, you're totally killing people.
Wait a second.
I've thrown a guy off a roof in that game.
Yeah, you crack their ribs and break his leg and then hang him upside down in the snow.
Yeah.
At like 2 a.m.
Somebody
Justin, be fine.
Somebody
be fine.
At the RSRB was like, you know what?
Someone
that's murder.
Yeah. A lot of those guys died. Even if, like, so let's say they have the best doctors in Gotham City, and they all come in. There's, like, I want to play the game where you're the ambulance driver that has to follow behind Batman and just clean up the mess that leaving.
That could be the companion app.
That's the
iPad
right.
minigame.
Let's be honest right now. The best doctors definitely don't work in Gotham. They don't want to be anywhere
near
there.
The best nothing works.
So it makes me think that maybe Batman... He doesn't kill people, but maybe his thing is that he doesn't kill people, but he doesn't know when he does.
Right.
But he actually does kill people.
He doesn't mean to.
But he has no idea when he does. Like, when he's just like, yeah, I'm going to drop a guy off a roof, And he's like, oh, he's totally fine down there.
But yeah, he's calculated the distance. He's glided. He's halfway to Ace Chemicals. By the time
they got and I think like once a month they're just like, "Hey, you totally killed that guy."
He's maybe he's like, what? Maybe he's one of those like man children that doesn't understand death, and he like, squeezes the puppy too hard and doesn't know that he killed it.
That's
like,
exactly.
Can you explain to me? It's like, well, you reach the end of the rope, and then there's no more rope left after that, and that's just how that's what you're doing to all these thugs. No, it's like even if those doctors are incredible, one out of every 10 of those guys is dead. They're dead. Oh, they didn't make it.
So for context, the previous Arkham games have been rated T, 13. Yeah, sure. The movies are PG-13. There hasn't been an R-rated, I guess the comics get dark and violent.
I was going to say, there is a precedent for super dark Batman stories. Yeah. Like, they're really messed up, you know, some of them. And they do, there is a precedent for even some killing in some of them.
Do you know that in one of them, his parents die?
Spoilers.
No, I think this is cool because this is like, I feel like we've spent the last few years reading stories about things going the opposite direction of this, right? Like when like they were like, hey, there's a Die Hard coming out it's PG-13. And we were like,
Mr. Falcon.
Yeah, Mr. Falcon.
No, if you whisper swear words, they don't have to be
no, I'm the kid holding the rabbit. I'm like, squeeze. so it's kind of cool to see games are just like, yeah, you know what? Let's make an M-rated Batman. Why not?
And I also like, I don't know if you have the quote or the news story in front of you, so if you don't have it, I'm going to have to paraphrase, but he's basically like, we went to WB, and they said, you know, and then when they were conceptualizing the game, and they...
Rocksteady.
Rocksteady went to their publisher, Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers is like, yo, this scene, and this scene are going to be, like, problematic. They're going to be troublesome. And the guy, the producer, whoever was in this interview, said he was terrified. Like, they're the whole game, and they were going to have to cut them. Or he thought he was worried they were going to have to cut them, but then eventually they're like, all right, that's your vision, so go make, like, your vision. So,
that's
like,
great.
Major kudos to them.
It is terrific, and I think that, honestly, I trust Rocksteady enough as a developer that they're going to use that M rating in a way that's tasteful and interesting and substantive and not just be like, hey, look, a few extra curse words and a lot more blood, and look, there's decapitations now. I know that they will do something thematic, that is thematically mature, that earns that M as opposed to just being blood and guts.
It really makes me want to look back at the older Rocksteady Batman games, because I mean they're really like these are kind of M-rated situations.
Sure.
That are detailed and gory and disgusting, but you never really saw it. Like, I think that, like, if there's a man and half of his face is boiled off by acid, that's kind of mature. That's kind of mature. And he's tricked a bunch of people into doing the same to their own bodies or their clothes to be part of his weird crew.
Yeah.
You know, or, like, there's a woman who's addicted to the pheromones from plants, and she has to fight people. Like, these are, like, weird. Like, the Joker at the end of the first Batman game, when he becomes,
the grotesque
mutant giant.
Even in the second one, he's all... messed up.
I mean, it's definitely about the context of how that stuff's presented more so than the situation itself. You know, there have been first-person shooters that were T-rated, although most are M, and it sort of depends on the specific depictions of how... It's very, like, technical in that way, in the same way that movies are made. Like, you can show everything, but, like, the moment the bullet enters someone's body...
Yep.
And you can still be PG-13, even if everything else is exactly
like you can shove a guy's head into a danger exposed voltage sign,
but
which
split
is what's happening behind you right now.
Yeah,
and it's Batman, and he's like, that's cool.
Yeah, but the guy's not like, oh fuck.
As long as he doesn't curse.
Yeah, it's
he's like boobs. And like, sorry, it's an M-rated.
It's a funny thing. Like, it's about who's who's receiving the violence too, right? Yeah. That's the thing. And
is it human or is it a monster, an alien?
Right. But we make less of it. Distinction about that I feel in games than they do in films. Like, for instance, like you look at Destiny, right? And it's like Destiny, you're just shooting aliens and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like not that graphic or anything. But then you've got like the Avengers, which is PG-13, and I mean,
is Destiny rated M?
I was just gonna say, is it M or T? Like, this is what this made me think of. Is when this news came out, I realized I'd never even think about game ratings. I am an adult, and I play games that are rated E, and I play games that are rated M, and like, it's just not a part of my thought process at all.
I think the reason I might have in my head mentally been assuming that Destiny is M is because I just had a conversation with my sister this past weekend with her freaking out about her 12-year-old son wanting to play Destiny.
I mean, that's the choice you have to make as a parent, right?
She was, like, it was because of them, right?
When your kids are like that age, like I've always thought it was strange that Halo is rated M.
Right, exactly. That's actually a better example of my point. Like, Halo is this sci-fi, you know, shooter where you're just, there's no worse violence in that than there is in the Avengers.
And it's
but
like very,
families go to see the Avengers, but like my sister
very minimal
never
blood
let my...
and you're fighting aliens and it gets the same rating as Call of Duty, even though they're wildly on like opposite ends of
this. So how old is your nephew?
12.
Okay, actually, you know, he's a little bit younger than that. I think he's 10. He's 10.
So he loves Batman.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
So this is, sort of brings up a problem, right? Because now a mother's going to walk into a store and be like, oh, he wants a new Batman game.
This is what I was going to... My next question, are Rocksteady and Warner Brothers leaving money on the table by giving us an M rating?
Probably.
No, I think they're accidentally exposing a lot of children to probably an M-rated game. Because I think a lot of parents are going to walk into a store
exactly
and never even think to assume that a Batman game is rated M.
Yeah. It's different than movies, right? Like, if you look younger than 17, they won't sell you a ticket to the movie.
Yeah.
Right. But with video games, I think a lot of kids play Call of Duty.
There's also, like, I mean, there's buying games digitally now. There's buying games online. Like, you can, when you go to a movie theater, you still have that guy who's 2 years older than however old you are. Kind of like, if you're 17, he's 19. He's looking you up and eyeing you up and be like, how old are you? Oh, you can't get in this movie. Yeah. But you, if you want, if like this game, on the day it launches on PS4, you can buy it digitally.
Man, like I said, it's just not even a part of my life at all. Like, what happens if you try to buy an M-rated game? Like, I don't feel like I have to put in my age on the PlayStation Store or anything like that. Or do they know because of my credit card?
It depends on the service that you're on. Some services, like Xbox Live, I believe, you can just set that in the options, like, hey, this
that's right. I guess I have seen those adult controls, like, make sure any purchase of, like, M-rated content has
to be approved. Like, you can probably go to their website to watch their video, right? Yeah. And it'll be, like, put in your age, and since I'm in my 30s, I just go to the drop-down menu and hit, I was born in 1901. Yeah, I'm a 200-year-old man trying to watch a video on the internet. And it's just like, oh, we sure showed them. It's like having a cop just standing there and be like, come on in, everybody can buy anything. Like,
yeah, it's like the cop when he pulls you over being like, yo, do you have any warrants? And you're like, nah. And he's like, all right,
okay,
cool.
He's like, cool.
Or he's like, what speed were you going? 40.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, fine.
Yeah, it's going the speed limit.
Plus, there's examples of M-rated games selling fabulously well, Call of Duty, GTA 5.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
It's certainly not like a...
That reminds me...
I'd love to see the actual demographics on those games, too. We'll never, ever, ever see those. Because no publisher will ever actually release them, and I don't even know if there's a way to find out. But I would love to know the demographics on GTA and Call of Duty, and this game specifically, in terms of how many people under the age of 17 or 18, whatever the legal barrier is. Is 17?
I don't even know. 17 for R-rated
are
movies.
Playing and enjoying these games, you know?
I do think, I mean, there's hard M's and soft M's, and I do expect this to probably be a softer M, but who the heck knows, maybe Rocksteady is going to do something nuts, but I do expect it to be more like Halo and less like, you know, GTA or Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Several years ago, there was that Wolverine game that was rated M that used Hugh Jackman's voice in it and everything.
Wow. Oh, right.
And it was good. The gameplay got a little repetitive over time, but it was like refreshing after seeing Wolverine watered down in movies so much. Yeah. To see him back in his like super ultra violent form as he is in the comics.
Yeah.
Well, it's like it's always fascinating to me because it's like a character like Wolverine is a man with swords on his hands.
Yeah.
And then he can only fight like robots and a bear. And it's like they did the same thing with like the Ninja Turtles in the comic books. They're slicing open they're slicing like the Foot Clan.
Bowsers.
And in the show they're
robots.
But
there's never any blood on the swords.
And then they make
them,
like in the movies, the Ninja Turtles basically, if you had a wooden weapon, you could hit a guy with it. But if you had a sword, you had to basically just like twirl it in the air.
Bonk him on the head.
Yeah, bonk him in the head with it. Like it's kind of dumb. So it's cool to see them embrace that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Let's try to guess what earned Batman Arkham Knight an M rating.
I think Batman Dies.
Whoa.
Really?
Why would that give
Would that be an M rating?
Unless it's like...
I don't know. Maybe it's going to be done graphically.
That would be weird. That would be a strange ending.
I think they're going to do something with the Arkham Knight being kind of a not established character. I feel like they're going to do something kind of over the top and maybe a little gruesome to establish him as being dangerous and being not to be trifled with.
That's exactly what I was thinking. He'll put a bullet in Commissioner Gordon's head.
Yeah. It'll
on
be
live
like that.
Gotham TV or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll be something horrific that they were just like, we need to do this to show how messed up this guy is.
Yeah.
Which, like, really, they it's probably could have done with something else, but...
And that is, I mean, ultimately, I mean, I don't want to, like, jump on it before it happens. That is kind of a cheap trick, right? To have, like, to show a really gruesome, like, nasty scene just to get us to hate the villain or take him seriously.
It's shock value.
Yeah.
You know?
And to be clear, we're not saying that's definitely what's going to happen or that it's already a cheap trick. You know, we'll see how it gets done, but that's what my theory is.
Mm-hmm.
I was just checking the ESRB to see if the rating description had been uploaded yet, but it's not there yet.
I always love when they do that.
Yeah.
Because it's pure nonsense.
Maybe it got a hard M for sex.
Yeah, maybe.
Batman and Harley Quinn.
They show the going scene before it. His parents died.
Oh.
They have sex in the movie theater. Batman's there and he's sad.
All right, Batman Arkham Knight is out June 2nd, I believe. Right before we all have to go to LA and cover E3. Right.
Cover that show. That show.
All right, did you guys hear about the Dying Light Collector's Edition in the UK?
No.
So, Dying Light has been out here for a month. It's been well received. Mm-hmm. People like it. The retail version was delayed in the UK, so it's coming out this week. To sort of like get people excited about it, there's one collector's edition. Only one of these are available.
Only one. Literally one. There's one.
One.
To buy.
Yeah. It's called the My Apocalypse Edition. It comes with
a nuclear bomb.
First of all, let's see this. Do you want me to tell you what it comes with, or do you want me to tell you the price first?
Let me clarify something real quick. There's one of them.
Yeah, only
there's
one.
One in the world.
Yep. Yeah.
This is not one SKU. There is only one of these in the entire world.
Yeah.
Only one person will say, I own My Apocalypse Edition.
So it's like that Wu-Tang album in the vault type of
yeah,
thing?
It's like yeah. That.
All right, I'm with you.
So do you want to know what it comes with, or do you want to know the price?
Let me hear the price first.
£250,000, which is about $386,000. For the My Apocalypse Edition of Dying Light. It comes with a zombie-proof house.
What? Wait,
that you can live in. You can go inside and live in.
You can't zombie-proof a house, though.
Well, yeah,
it's two stories. There are vantage points at the top, so you can see when walkers are approaching. It has a weapons storage room.
Where is it? Where is the real estate?
They build it for you.
Like anywhere?
They build you a new zombie-proof house.
Wait, because if they build it for me here, that's a good deal on a house.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
We still have to add the land.
And you get a free copy of the game.
That's not all.
You get
four free copies.
So theoretically, you buy an empty plot of land for yourself. And then go, give me my house!
Yeah, they build you a zombie. You a zombie fortress.
It's like a company that they sell makeshift homes. Like, they could just put up this home anywhere.
Modular housing.
Yeah. So you get the house. You get a TV. An Xbox One. Four copies of the game, mm-hmm. home theater system, zombie parkour lessons, a match against the devs where they let you win.
That's got to be the weirdest thing I've ever heard. That is the weirdest
They're gonna let you win. A trip to developer techland. You get your face scanned into the game onto a zombie. You'll get real night vision goggles, a box of adult diapers, because the game's supposed to be scary, two sets of Razer headphones, and a human-sized zombie figure for $386,000.
I want to go back to, there's a lot to unpack here, as Altano would say, but I want to go back to the multiplayer match. Someone is on the fence. Man, this sounds great. I think I want I want to make sure I win the multiplayer match, though. I don't want to do all this and then have you just beat my ass at the game.
I don't want to go dark on this, but it sounds like it's like the buy it now button for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Like, somebody's like, This kid really loves zombies and he doesn't have a lot of time. Let's give him everything. He can even play it against the developers and he'll win. Don't tell him anything.
So I'm going to make a prediction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone is going to start a crowdfunding campaign so that a bunch of people can own this.
And they'll all live there together.
And then it'll be like a compound or something. It'll be like they sell tickets for admission or whatever. Guaranteed. This is not. No, I don't know the one person who's going to pony up $386,000. But I can see gamers coming together and putting together a crowdfunding campaign for this.
Well, I was thinking, even if nobody buys this, it's just publicity for them and their game, right? We're talking about their game.
Yeah.
A better title for this would be a contest. Where you take this and you give this to somebody. You don't make somebody buy adult diapers at a house. It's also like, as the list kept going, it was just like, why are you doing this? And why are there four copies of the game? Why are there two sets of headsets?
Yeah.
What is going on? Like,
just random numbers.
This sounds like there's someone out there that's got, you know, a lot of money, some millionaire, that's kind of thinking about it. They're like, yeah. And then how much remorse would they have, like, 8 months from now when they're living in their, like, zombie fortress house? And
dude,
they're like,
I think
probably none, because they're not going to live in that house, just like they don't live in any of their other four houses.
This just made me think of, do you remember when they gave away the Simpsons house?
No.
They made the Simpsons house, the exact layout with the stairs and the house and the mouse hole in the living room. and then they gave it away in a contest to somebody. And then so someone, and it was the colors, like the crazy colors that when you see them in real life, they look insane. And then someone moved into the Simpsons house. But that was a contest. They didn't sell it to you.
You just reminded, like, the buyer's remorse thing makes me want to see a camera of the guy or girl who walks into this, like, it's probably just a shipping container with a window.
Yeah.
And then there's just, like, four copies of the game and an Xbox One, and you can't even plug it in anywhere because you haven't called the company to come set up gas and electric on the land you had to buy. And he just sits there, and there's adult diapers, and he's just like, fuck.
A couple years ago, Grid 2, the game Grid 2, had a collector's edition that cost £125,000 that came with a car.
Yeah.
Wow. That's an expensive car.
There was a Call of Duty one, too, right? Where it was like a Call of Duty car you could buy.
Comes with a gun.
And it came with a copy of the game or something and a gun.
Yeah. But then for Saints Row 4, there was a super dangerous Wad Wad edition. Again, it was a situation where there was only one of them available and it cost $1 million. And I couldn't find any data on if anyone ever bought this. But what was included was a Virgin Atlantic space flight, a hostage rescue experience, plastic surgery.
Wait, hold on. What was that second one? A hostage experience?
Yeah, also a spy training day.
Awesome.
A personal shopper, two luxury hotel stays with first class flights to the hotels, a Lamborghini, a Toyota Prius with a year of insurance, and more.
That actually sounds like a fairly awesome and somewhat practical collection of things.
Except for the space flight.
Yeah. Well, it's not a good deal.
Are you kidding me? Are you telling me that when space flight starts, like commercial space flight happens, you don't want to be, you don't want to have a ticket on one of those first flights?
No, space flight is fucking incredible, but describe it as practical is not the word I would use.
Okay, practical is the wrong word. I guess what I'm saying is that these are things that you would conceivably desire and want to have, as opposed to, you know,
diapers. Did you throw plastic surgery in there?
That's one of the things that you could get.
Yeah. Like any kind? Because I feel like that you can get up into the millions if you're like, hey, make me look like, you know, Ronald McDonald.
Can you imagine what the fine print is on like this? So, like you can only get a nose job.
The fine print on this would fill this room if you printed it out.
But this actually wasn't a good deal because someone added it all up. And even though that edition cost $1 million, it all only added up to about $630K.
Yeah, that's every special edition is $6 worth of plastic garbage that they're then selling you for $30 extra.
I'm telling you, you gotta really splurge on the plastic surgery part to get that money up there. Just get a couple extra hands or something.
That's the business model of the special edition, though, is sell it for $90 instead of $60 and then give people $5
worth about $75. I forgot to mention, going back to Dying Light, that edition costs $386,000. That's the equivalent of 6,433 copies of the game.
Or four.
minus the four of the two.
What are you going to do with the other three copies of the game? You don't need four.
They buy diapers there now, too. Buy on sale, use diapers here at Diaper Stop.
Pre-owned.
All right, Dying Light. It's out now. Let us know if any GameScoop fans buy the My Apocalypse.
Yes, please do. Invite us over to your house.
We'll come and do the show from your zombie house.
Oh my god.
Yes.
I'll wear the diapers if it.
Brian will wear the diapers.
I didn't say I'm going to crap in them.
So that's where you draw the line. You'll put the diaper on.
Yes, we'll crap
but you won't
yes,
use
Yes, hypothetically,
it.
If somebody listening to the show spends that kind of money and invites us over to do a live show, I'll put on a diaper.
Look. Let's underpromise.
I'll wear it on the flight home.
Let's underpromise and overdeliver. Okay, not the other way around.
But I want one of those copies of the game.
I'll pee in the diaper, but I ain't pooping in it.
All right. Getting off the rails here. This week, IGN updated its top 25 PS4 games list. Mm-hmm.
Sure did.
You got U2. Oh, nope, that's not the right image.
Oh my god, who is that?
That elf. With a gun.
You know.
And the number one PS4 game was Shadowrun for Xbox 360.
Elf gun,
I thought
64.
That's what that was. I don't know where that came from.
We'll get there eventually. There we go. Just cycle
through. Right, there we go.
Anyway, top 25 PS4 games. There's some big changes because this is coming off the first big holiday season for the PS4, right?
Yeah, a lot more time has passed since we did the first list. So
wanted to make sure we got games like all the big fall stuff that came out that deserves a place on the list.
Yeah, for sure. So new games to the list include The Evil Within, mm-hmm. Just it made it
snuck
in
on.
Snuck on.
Just snuck on there. Yep.
What, 25?
Number, yeah, 25.
Yep.
It's on there. And the newly released Grim Fandango Remastered.
Yep.
It's on there too. Red 24.
Sure. Yeah. Right behind it.
Still need to play that one.
Yeah, you absolutely do. I mean, if you haven't played the original, you're definitely missing something pretty special and kooky.
Probably use a guide these days. The puzzles are from a different era.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't include the hint system like the Monkey Island special editions did.
No, so it's still it's not remastered in that way. It's still very much the from the era that it was created.
You know, it was incredible in the time, but times have changed, and it's a fantastic story, fantastic mood, atmosphere, all
great
the rest
universe
of it.
That was built there. Yep. But totally, those mechanics of how to solve puzzles are a little dated now. Yeah. But.
And The Wolf Among Us is added to the list.
Yep.
And I still haven't finished the last episode of that. Ooh.
Do it. Get around to it. Get around to it.
Is The Walking Dead on there too?
No, Walking Dead is not on there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, it's not a requirement that you know there's only one Telltale game on a top 25 list. Like, we can do whatever we want. It could be all Telltale games,
but we
did sort of think that Wolf. I don't know. It's got sort of a special thing going on. And we wanted it on there.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's kind of a singular creation.
We swapped out Call of Duty Ghosts for Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
Yeah, that's right. Because I mean, to be honest. The list of top 25 PS4 games, not that Ghost is a terrible game or not, you know, worthy of anyone's time by any means, but of course, when you have a smaller pool of games, games get on there that maybe aren't necessarily all stellar games.
Sure.
So, whereas you look at, the PS3 list or the Xbox 360 list, those systems have been around for years and years and years, so their top 25 reads like a best games of the generation list, whereas, you know, an early life for a new console is, you know, there's less to pick from. Yeah. So, definitely we felt that was ripe to come off and for Advanced Warfare to go on.
We do these lists. We used to do them every year. We're starting to do them every 6 months now because they're so important. Those first couple iterations of each console's list are an opportunity for some games to sort of sneak on that, you know, will get pushed off as more and more 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 games come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was happy to see Far Cry 4.
Yes,
totally.
Yep.
The game is awesome.
Love that game.
And Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah, of course.
Already forgotten. I worked on the list. How high? I know we put it really high.
Mordor is five.
Yeah, yeah. Mordor's five. Yeah, wow. It's really, really good.
Mordor made it on five. And why not, right? I mean, like, that was...
Mordor was... It didn't win our Game of the Year. Dragon Age did. But
narrowly missed.
But exactly. Mordor was very close. Everyone universally loves it.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see where they go with that series.
And a really exciting forward step in how you structure open world action games in a way that's interesting.
Forward step giving orcs accents.
Yep, there you go. There's that too.
We added Grand Theft Auto 5.
Uh-huh.
Unsurprisingly.
Yeah, well, it's funny you said that because there was some debate about that. Not so much because we don't think the game itself is worthy, but, you know, it's always tough to say, to kind of parse through, well, hey, this was a game from technically last generation, and it's just...
Yeah, sure. We spent a lot of time talking about this, actually. Like, sometimes people, Last of Us is still on there, Grim Fandango's on there, GTA's on there, and that's something that people... That was a problem some people had with our list, was, it's just a bunch of old games that got ported, so of course they're, you know, going to be on this list. But the rule that we actually set, we talked about it a lot, if it's a straight port from last generation or earlier, you're not worthy to be on this list. Like, work had to go into, you know, improving or remaking or remixing or changing some element of the game if it's an older game being ported to next gen.
Yeah. So, and by older, we mean like before last, what did we say, the last year?
I don't remember the exact cutoff. Yeah. We wrote it all down, what the specific criteria is. So that's how stuff like Last of Us and Grim Fandango and GTA, they put, you know, a substantive amount of effort into updating those games for the new console. And so we decided that they were eligible to be on the list.
Oh, got it. Okay, so like remaking a game... The way they did The Last of Us, because they didn't really add a ton of stuff to The Last of Us.
Right,
but it was 60 FPS, which is a super significant change, and 1080p is a pretty significant change.
And they bundled in the DLC and stuff.
Like, a better example is something like...
Tomb Raider Definitive Edition.
Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, or the Nintendo has a lot of good examples with stuff like Mario Galaxy.
I was surprised to see so many Nintendo games on the PS4
list. Well, so Mario Galaxy is not eligible to be on the top Wii U games, even though it's on the eShop. You know, because otherwise you'd have Ocarina of Time. Like, Link to the Past would be the number one game on every Nintendo
console. Wind Waker had overhauled graphics.
Sure, exactly.
And redid the Triforce Quest. Yeah, okay. That makes perfect sense.
Well, what about Minecraft? We added that to the list.
Uh-huh.
Is there... What new was added to Minecraft?
I mean, it's just what do you mean? Like, it's not a port of an older game. It's just Minecraft. Like,
I guess I think of it as an older game now. But maybe that's yeah, just it's my funny perception of
because
it.
Because it was in beta for so long, right? Yeah. So it's lived in our consciousness for a long time. But also, you got to think about it coming to consoles is is still relatively new. I think it came out on the first console edition was the 360 edition, for sure, right? Yeah. And that was only, what now, a year and a half?
I mean, Minecraft is still being updated, I guess. Yeah. So it came out and we reviewed it and, you know, we put our stamp on it. But then it's sort of like that game is still receiving new content and mm-hmm. new patches and new updates and new elements are continually being added to Minecraft. Like, it's a game that's still alive and thriving. So I feel like it's kind of a different case in a game like, oh, well, we put Limbo on PS4. And yeah, Limbo's incredible, but it's the same game. We already gave it its accolades.
I think a lot of people look at these lists, or a lot of people like us or hardcore gamers on IGN look at these lists and they're just like, oh, you know, half the best PS4 games are ports or last gen or something like that.
Yeah.
But there is a significant amount of people that look at this list for the reader service of, like, I just bought a PS4. It's my first console ever. What should I play? Like, they don't care that something was old somewhere else, you know? Yeah. It's just like if I wrote a list about the 25 best movies on Netflix, you couldn't be like, well, that used to be on VHS. That's where I used to watch it. It's like, who cares? No, like...
It's not the 25 most PlayStation-y games on PlayStation 4.
Right. And that's why there was also, I saw a strange criticism
I would read that list.
Again, just like I never think about ESRB readings, I never think about platform. Like, there's a lot of criticism about it being all multi-platform games. Like, you didn't really highlight the PlayStation exclusives. I could have played these games anywhere. And I thought that was an interesting, like, it never even, like, a good game is a good game to me. Yeah. I don't even think about, like, platform lines very often because I own them all. So
It's also not a list that says, hey, these are the top 25 games to make your Xbox-loving friends jealous.
I like how Tom put it. Like, they're not the PlayStation-iest games. They're the best games.
I said that.
Yeah, and I told him he should write that list, so good luck with that, guys.
We do, I mean, not to get too super nerdy, but, like, we talk about this a lot.
Video game talk show.
Yeah.
But, like, we spent...
If you could be a fly on the wall for these, like, if anyone has any questions about how nerdy or passionate we are
or how much time, like, they think that these lists just get, like, pooped out, but, like, you go around and around and around, like, should it be the list of the 25 best games or should it be, like, a buyer's guide, like, a list of the 25 games you should play now? Because, like, last gen, do we reward Call of Duty 4 for its excellence, even though we wouldn't really recommend someone check out the multiplayer now? Like, it's old and busted and kind of dead.
Right.
Or is it a recognition of excellence? Is it meant to be, like, a buyer's guide or, like, rewarding them for their good work? Like, we spend a lot of time talking about stuff like that.
Yeah, and we end up landing on if someone just got a PlayStation 4 and they wanted to know the best 25 games that they can play on it right now, like, that's the purpose of the... Of the list.
And I mean, I kind of know the answer to this, but let me ask you for the posterity of the audience. Like, the what factor does diversity play in terms of, like, genre and not ethnicity? Because, I mean, I don't know what Rayman is.
We use affirmative action, so.
Yeah.
20% of the list needs to be action RPGs.
got it.
First person shooters.
Yeah, like, do you go like, oh man, we got this list together, but there's really no, there's no racing identification here. There's no, like, fighting here. You know?
It's really just about.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's really just about what the 25 best games are to play
system. We cover off on that with the panelists that are on each group. Like, we think really hard about, it's not everyone at IGN determining each list. Like, it was, I think we have 5 or 6 people split up into, you know, all the teams for each platform. So there's a Wii team and a PS4 team and a 3DS team. And then those groups get together. And when we form those groups, we try to make them really diverse. So we include people from the UK and Australian offices who play a lot of racing games and some of the stuff that, like, maybe I'm not as personally into. Some people, you know, I try to make sure, well, let's make sure this team has someone that really cares and knows about indie games and can make sure that they're speaking up and talking about that. So there's no quota of, like, oh, you know, we have to get racing games on this list. We just try to get a diverse group together, and then it sort of sorts itself out.
Cool.
We inserted last year's Game of the Year, Dragon Age Inquisition, right? Yes. Number two. Right behind Last of Us Remastered.
That's right.
Well deserved.
Yeah.
I played it on Xbox One, but my understanding is that the PS4 version is great.
Yeah, that's the version I played and played it for review, and also excellent in all the same ways.
It really got me back into the RPG genre. I've been away from it for years. I mean, I played Skyrim, but, like, a little bit more RPG, I guess, if you want to put it that way.
Yes.
So then it led me down, like, I used to be really hardcore in the genre, got away from it. Dragon Age pulled me back in, and now I'm back into, like, Baldur's Gate. I'm playing a little Divinity.
Cool. I love Divinity.
So I highly recommend even if you're not a gamer, that this is normally your kind of thing, give it a shot. I think you might be pleasantly surprised with how sort of fast-paced the combat is, but still deep. Game, I can't say enough good things about it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And the funny thing is, and I've said this to people, especially after Dragon Age 2, I went into Inquisition with I don't want to say low expectations, because, you know, that would imply that,
sure,
like,
an open mind.
You know, but an open mind, but I was fully, like, dreading and but kind of preparing and bracing myself for the idea that this was going to be another kind of super streamlined, super dumbed down RPG, you know, I guess for the masses or whatever, that wasn't going to really interest me as someone who comes from the Baldur's Gate, you know, or going back before that, the Ultima, you know, original, you know, Dragons, you know, Dragon Warrior stuff. I didn't think it was going to satisfy me at all, and I was completely, completely wrong. Like, yes, it is more accessible in ways, and yes, it is more immediate in terms of its reward and how the combat feels, but certainly for, like, an old school, like, RPG person who loves all their having to cross their T's and dot their I's and know their stats and look at their party compositions and care about their gear and what they're doing with all their slots, like, definitely holds up on all those levels, which is really impressive.
Yep.
So that's 9 new games added to the list. Yes. That means 9 games couldn't stay. It's not the top 34 PS4 games.
I got you.
It's not Matt Scoop.
Nope. Definitely not. So some games had to get out of here. Dead Nation was one of them. The Apocalypse Edition.
Which made me kind of sad, only because I do love Housemarque's work, and I think that they are the masters of their particular trade, but it's just this is the conversation we had over and over again. It's like when you start looking at this broader range of games since the PS4 has been out longer, you start having to say things like, "Is this game great? Yes, but is that good enough to be on the list with these 25 other games?
Yeah,
maybe not." And that's Dead Nation was one of those games.
That's what the conversation becomes. Is there's always someone that loves the game and doesn't want to see it cut, and then you have to say, "Look, you know, we know this game is great, but it's not better than, you know, these other games that we know we need to make room for and include."
Sure. Yeah, there were so many times when a game would be up to be cut, and the one person in the room who was, like, you know, super, like, champion-y about that game. Like, for me, Dead Nation, I was the one on Dead Nation who was like, "Oh, I don't know, guys, I don't think I want to see this one fall off." Every time the person would, like, wax poetic about it does this, and it does that, and it's so this, and everyone would stop and be like, "You're absolutely right, but what do you take off?
It's not better than Transistor. It's not better than Far Cry." Right.
And then you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And you realize, well, if I can't take anything off for it, then...
Yeah, we say this a lot. Like, the comment section on these things are always, you know, a war zone, and it's incredible to watch. But, like, we have that in the office when we get together to do these lists. Like, it's that heated, it's that passionate, it's that exciting. And
I'm probably a little nicer about it.
A little bit.
Well, and at the end of the day, it's still just an opinion. Like, if someone else says, I would have put these games on there, and I'm like, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Because it's not just a ranked list of IGN review scores, right? There's something, it's a little deeper than that, and that's what I appreciate about them.
We also, I mean, I stand by our reviews. I think they're an incredible tool. I use them all the time, you know, just personally to help me inform my buying decisions. But, you know, opinions can rise or fall over time, and sometimes, you know, you get some separation between a game and you realize, man, I liked it a lot more than that score I gave it. Or sometimes your opinion can drop, and so top 25 lists are an opportunity to sort of make some adjustments there.
Injustice, Gods Among Us, did not make the cut this time.
No, it didn't. I mean, that's a game that I thought was a great fighting game. I reviewed that for us. But again, it's one of those games where is it an essential experience on PS4? You know, probably not. It's definitely a solid, more than solid brawler. But it being on PS4 honestly didn't do that much for it, except for bundle in all the DLC.
Yeah, we'll see what MKX can do.
Yeah,
absolutely. MKX, I suspect, you know, will be in the running to be on that list when it comes out. But of course, who knows? I haven't played that much of it yet. But yeah, there's another example of a great game, solid all around. But we couldn't name a game on the list as it exists now that we would have bumped for it.
Yeah. Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, cut from the list.
Yep.
It's
if there's no comment, it's fine. I just wanted to point out what didn't make the list.
I mean, obviously, Phantom Pain, you know, hotly anticipated, very much looking forward to it. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what it
Ground
can
Zeroes
do.
Was kind of a demo, teaser.
It was a very divisive. is very divisive.
Appetizer for Phantom Pain?
Sure, there's the argument you can make, and I don't know if I would necessarily make it, but there's the argument you can make that it's kind of like a, like you said, it's an hors d'oeuvre, or it's kind of like a...
It's kind of unprecedented to just release that before a game comes out. There's never been anything quite like it.
Yeah, no, there hasn't, where it's kind of like a demo or prologue that you're paying, that you're charging money for. Yeah,
but it's pretty meaty, and I don't know, it's an interesting product from like just a business standpoint.
Sure, absolutely, and you know, both because of that and because of the nature of some of its content, I think there's kind of a divisive feel about it. So it makes, I think Lucy's review was awesome, and I agree with like 95% of the things that she had to say in it. But again, like you said, it's more than just the review score, what one person thought. Mm. And you have that committee of people in and talking about it, and it's such a divisive game that people have varying feelings on. You know, it's almost impossible to avoid it slipping off.
I think, again, you know, not a bad product at all, great product, but easy cut candidate in the face of things like Far Cry and Dragon Age and Mordor.
Mm-hmm. Madden NFL 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I guess just came out last summer.
Yeah, you know,
it's like good reviews.
Yeah, sure. It's solid reviews. One of the better, current gen, sports titles. But I think there were other sports titles that probably could have made it on before that. Now that Pro Evolution Soccer, which didn't make it on the list ultimately.
We talked about it.
Yeah, we did talk about it. Pro Evolution Soccer was so incredible this year.
It was like a bubble game. Like if it was a list of 26 games, it might have snuck.
Yeah, it might have snuck on there, absolutely. And so it's like if Madden wasn't even the best sports game in the group, then we couldn't really justify it being there.
Yeah.
And Wolfenstein might have been 26, actually.
Yeah, Wolfenstein was heavily discussed.
Mercenary Kings, which I get, I like that game, but
not a
top 25 game for me, probably. Killzone Shadowfall, which was a launch game.
That one's a little bit more controversial. Mm. Some people love it, some people don't, and that's really more of a reflection of the panelists changing, I guess.
Sure. Mm. Yeah.
Which we do our best to be consistent and, you know, kind of honor the thoughts of people that came before, but it is ultimately the opinion of the five or six people making the list, and when those five or six people change, sometimes, you know, sort of the winds can blow in a different direction. I personally thought Shadowfall was competent. Like, you got a new console, you're looking for a pretty fun new game to play. Can't go wrong with Killzone. I don't really consider it having any staying power, being, you know, a pillar of that game's library.
I don't think you could have possibly put that better.
Thanks, man.
100%. That's exactly how I feel about that game. It was a great show horse when that system first came out, and it's just, I mean, the PS4 is alive and living with a great library now, and I think that this list showcases that, and I don't think that really had a place on it.
As we mentioned before, Call of Duty Ghosts was dropped for Advanced Warfare. The final two left off the list were LEGO, Marvel Super Heroes, and Metro Redux, which was just a repackaging of last-gen games, which are good. But
those were both, I think, I don't remember exactly what happened in the room. I think those were the last two to be cut. And I think people really wanted to keep them around, but it's kind of like, again, it's not a judgment against them, but it's just as the console's library continues to evolve and get better and better. If it were a list of top 30, you know, five more great games would sneak on there. But as it is, it's not, and they just draw the line.
There's a lot. I find the list fascinating these days because there's a lot more competition within them. Years ago, we used to delineate very differently. We would say downloadable games or indie games or smaller games and games like that would get their own list, like the top 25 best downloadable games on PS4. All those games are downloadable now. So now you see games like Shadow of Mordor competing with games like Fez and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's painful to see something like LEGO Marvel or Wolfenstein cut to make room for something like Velocity 2 X or Transistor. Although obviously I like those games more, they wouldn't be in the top 25. But it does speak to that problem of room, you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, our top 25 PS4 games is up now on IGN. We will revisit that list again in September.
Yeah, every 6 months now. And the rest of the top 25s are rolling out. By the time people watch this, there'll be another one. We're rolling out two or three of these lists a week for the next couple weeks.
Cool. Let's check in with listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hi, listeners.
What's up, listeners?
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com, just like Nathan Hill did.
Oh, Nathan.
Nathan says, I am a 40-year-old gamer that has been a gamer for probably 36 years.
Wow, that's awesome.
I have played tons of video games throughout those years, some great, some pretty terrible. Let me say, I don't understand the hatred The Order has gotten in the gaming press. IGN gave the game an okay score of 6.5, which is actually quite high when compared to your peers on other sites. I was really looking forward to the game and bought it in spite of the reviews. I'm glad I did. I am really enjoying the story, graphics, voice acting, etc. All are top-notch. The gameplay is fine, reminding me of a standard third-person cover-based shooter. I am hopeful that Sony will greenlight a sequel so I can spend more time in this interesting world they have created. Now to my question, am I crazy? Why am I enjoying this game so much? As I said, I have played games for a long time, certainly know a good game from a bad one. I know these things are subjective, but I can usually find a positive review to hang my hat on. In this game's case, I can find none. I would have this game, I would give this game a solid 5. I still see no scores even approaching that level. I want to point out that The Order got a 7.9 from IGN Italia.
Ah, well, there you go.
No, you're not crazy at all. First of all, you're not crazy because you can like whatever you want to like. Yep. You know, you can be the only person that likes the game, and that's still a totally fine and valid feeling. But even outside of that, it's really hard in video games. It becomes, it's sort of like a shouting match in the comments and on forums and on Reddit, and something is either awesome or garbage. It's really hard for something to just be okay.
Yeah, totally.
Like, just to be like, yeah, you know, I didn't think it was great. Yep. I didn't think it was awful. Like, to exist in that middle ground is almost impossible.
We are
especially when it's a AAA, big budget, huge project.
We've sort of devolved into a very binary species when it comes to describing experiences and games and products. And especially something like The Order, like, it's coming down the pipe and it looks amazing. It catches a snag here and there. Like, it gets delayed and then we find out that the campaign's shorter than we might want it to be. And then it comes out and it's getting, like, 6s and 6.5s and 5s and stuff like that. But no one said the game was outright trash or broken or bad, I don't think. Like, I mean, a 6.5 is okay.
Yeah. Well, we were on the higher end of this game. I got, like, 5s in most places.
Yeah. Yeah. And even he said he would give it a 5, but he's enjoying it.
He would give it a 7.
Oh, he gave it a 7.
Yeah. I think it's good.
I could have sworn you said 5.
I think you might have said 5 out loud.
It's okay. It's all good. We still love you. Yeah.
You meant 7.
5 out of 7. So I mean, I don't have any problem with that. I think that's like it's fine to accept that you are enjoying something that maybe other people aren't enjoying. I mean, you're 40 years old. You're an adult. You know that.
Yeah. It's terrible that that a person who's been playing games for 36 years feels like they need to they need some kind of validation from someone. Not sad because of like him that he feels that. It's sad that we live that that's the ecosystem right now where if you like something that other people don't, you're like, what's wrong with me?
You have to keep it a secret.
Beat. Yeah, because they beat this into your head that if you like something that someone else doesn't, then there's something wrong with you.
And
you have some really good reasons to justify it or something. You know, if it's what you like, it's what you like.
Different people get different things out of games. Yeah. And it's like, I actually haven't played The Order yet. Its short length kind of appeals to me. Like, I think I might want to get a copy and play through it over a weekend. Although I have the benefit of not having to pay $60 to do that, to be fair. But I want the game's world building. You know, I'm really excited for that. It looks gorgeous. So if the gameplay is kind of so-so and it's really on rails and the cutscenes are long, like that's a completely valid reason to not want to spend $60 on it and to give it, you know, a middling review score. But that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy just the gorgeous world and just, you know, go to London and fight some monsters and then peace out and then maybe I'll play it and be like, yeah, this really is bad. But maybe I'll play it and, you know, appreciate it, be able to appreciate it on that level.
Yeah, I mean, and on the flip side of the coin, I mean, like, you're absolutely right. It's about what you take, what you need out of a gaming experience, right? And for me, I mean, world building, super cool. Good story, if it's really that good, then sure, it can bring something to me. But I'm constantly, I show myself again through my reviews, I'm mechanics. Like, everything with me is about what it is like to play and if it makes me... It makes my brain fire. If it gives me the opportunity to make interesting decisions, that's what I play games for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, even less than your typical linear third-person shooter, like say a Gears of War or something, I feel like The Order just gives.
You're playing it some, right? Or you already have given up on it? You played a few hours.
Well, I played about halfway through it or so, and just I couldn't stick with it because. Yeah. I felt like I wasn't making any choices. Even when there was a firefight going on, I wasn't making choices. And yeah, Gears of War, the choices aren't super complex.
No, you're totally choosing.
But you're totally choosing what weapons to use and why. You're totally choosing when to, you know, blind fire, when to pop your head out from cover, you know, which pieces of cover to situate yourself on. You're kind of keeping your eye on the entire battlefield and deciding what targets are important to prioritize. So there's still decisions being made there, and super, there's tons of decisions being made when you play Halo because of the sandboxy nature of those engagements, you know? Yeah. And then I played The Order, and it really just did felt like whack-a-mole with guns, and
but, I was you like, know, I mean, like, for some people, that might be the experience they're looking for. Like,
sure.
I feel like
we're sort of spoiled because, and our audience is spoiled, especially because we, with the introduction of 3D games decades ago, we've been given more and more and more freedom in games. And when we go back to that sort of like genre or area where that freedom is taken away, it's judged against games like The Last of Us or GTA, where there is things are a little bit more opened up.
Yeah.
When in reality, like, I do think there is the benefit to a linear short game every now and then. We just have to figure out where that fits in the world, because I think that selling it for $60 and having a game that's 6 hours, like, I'm okay with it, but the majority of the audience is not. So,
Completely legitimately, too.
Like, yeah.
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 Yeah, I mean, so I don't review very many games. I'm my features editor, but when I do review games, it's kind of challenging for me because I can kind of see it. I know this is probably going to be crazy based on how I talk in GameScoop, but I can actually see the bright side of everything. Like, when I play a lot of weird experimental indie games, and I'll be like, everything around this game is bad, but it's got this one cool thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's got this one cool idea, and like, I totally dig it. And I'll play a lot of weird stuff and like ignore all the weird, strange, indie jank just because it's got this neat idea that I haven't seen before,
yeah,
or
sure,
you know, characters or whatever that I enjoy.
And they'll do that with The Order. They'll take the best parts of it and they'll build the sequel on it. Like, we talked about this on Podcast Beyond the other day. About how you don't spend this much money on this engine and these characters and this game and this world and just go,
yeah,
well, see ya. It just doesn't happen anymore. Yeah. It is like, an investment. They are world building. They are creating a franchise. Yeah. And it, you know, in the same way Assassin's Creed 1 was weird and very rough around the edges, and 2 was awesome, and now it's annualized. Like, The Order will find its sea legs.
You know what they should do when they make The Order 2? They should include The Order 1886. You just get it when you buy the sequel.
Sure.
Because, like, how many people are going to be like, man, this sequel looks dope, but I never played the original and I don't want to buy it.
Sure. I mean, they did that with Bayonetta 2, right?
Yeah.
There you go, Sony. That's a freebie.
I don't know. If the game
free
is...
Free idea. Give your game away for free.
If the game was received so poorly, though, that most people didn't want to take the time to play it before, or buy it and play it before the second one came out.
It was received poorly by critics, and it was received poorly by audience members and gamers that didn't play it and probably had no intention of playing it, but I bet you money that this game will crack the top 7 or top 5 on MPD.
Man, I don't know. Well,
it's a weird month, man. What's it going up against in February?
That's true.
Evolve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Evolve, which is multi-platform, right? It's available on multiple platforms. I guess that's the main reason, is that not only did it not really set the world on fire critically and commercially, but it's also on one platform.
The game, whether it cracks the top whatever, undoubtedly a huge failure. It's just like, was it so big of a failure that it's going to get a sequel or not? I'm kind of on the fence.
Yeah, we'll see.
Moving on. This is Brendan Rafferty. Hey guys, I wanted to know if there will ever be a Shadowrun 2 or a Shadowrun remake on Xbox One. I'm referring to the old game Shadowrun that was on the Xbox 360 and PC.
Okay, that's not now, an old game.
This is exactly what
we live in an era now where the old game Shadowrun is them is talking the about the 360 class-based shooter.
From what? How many
which
years
came
ago
out
was
in
that?
2007.
Seven.
Yeah, but I don't even like
so
that's.
I want to point out when that game came out, the original Super Nintendo Shadowrun game was 14 years old, and the pen and paper Shadowrun game was 18 years old.
That just broke my brain.
So aside from the fact that we all now feel very old and are going to leave this studio and immediately have a midlife crisis because of that statement, I am totally on board with what this person is saying.
Yeah, Shadowrun is hugely underrated.
I'm dying for a sequel to this game. People hated this game.
Shadowrun had so many good ideas.
So many good ideas.
It's a textbook example of what I was just talking about. Like,
yes,
all these elements that are around the good are bad, but then it had this good kernel.
Yeah, of this loadout system where you're customizing.
It was so ahead of its time.
Yeah, you're picking loadout is like picking a race and then picking magic augmentations for them and then picking gear for them. And you could put together all these crazy like combinations. Like, you could have an elf that like
it was a class-based multiplayer
hand glider.
Like, it was a class-based multiplayer shooter, which now that's everything. Every game is a class-based multiplayer shooter now. Every company is making one. Blizzard's making one. You know,
and as those go, this had more crazy gadgets, more crazy abilities, more crazy perks than any of the ones that you see now.
Had that crazy tree.
Yeah. Yeah, the tree. Right, yeah. So there was
really like this game.
I know, we just let them go. It's like two kids talking to their parents about
here's a great
how
example.
Awesome something is.
There was this healing tree.
There's a hang glider and a healing tree.
You summon this healing tree, and then it would do healing in an area of effect all around it while it was out. So you could be a troll character who regenerates health on their own, and they can also carry heavy weapons. So you'd have a chain gunning troll who would just regenerate health like almost nonstop, and it was like this huge like choke point stopper that you, how do you get around it? Well, then there's dwarves. Dwarves are, like in a lot of lore, they're immune to magic, and they kind of negate magic around them. So obviously, if you were playing against a team that was using a troll with this tree, you almost needed to have a dwarf and maybe give him like a stealth suit so that he can get in close enough to just be in the presence of this tree and destroy it and negate the troll's health regen.
Shadowrun,
all kinds of stuff like
Shadowrun
that.
Shadowrun was a really, really clever game.
Yeah, it was really smart.
It was really ahead of its time. I actually don't even think it had that much. I think it was a great game
Were you going to say it was low on content?
No.
Okay.
No.
Then continue. Well, because that's why it was poorly received at the time. It was a full $60 game.
I don't agree.
I mean, it was.
I think it was poorly
just
received.
Look at the reviews. It was a full $60 game. Multiplayer only, no single player campaign, and then there just weren't a lot of like, modes, levels, or weapons.
So. There were Titanfall, Evolve.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You're right. It was
Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Like, none of those games had a troll tree with a Gatling gun. And
that's right.
Yeah, none of them are as awesome
as
that.
That's right.
No, I think Shadowrun was poorly received because it was a super hardcore, thinky RPG that they turned into, you know, an action game, and people were mad about that. They were mad about that.
Yeah, and I think
that's how the Shadowrun license was used.
And coming from the other end of it, people who wanted a competitive like arena shooter, there was just too much to think about. It was like, wait, I've got to understand like what the racial traits of these different races are, and like how the different spells and different gadgets interact with one another. And it was super like kind of
I guess
heady
the,
for,
so the original
for that
question
kind of
was, no, we're never going to get a sequel, sadly.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we can get like you know a spiritual sequel or some of the other you know Battleborn or some of these games that are coming out can scratch that itch. What's the name of Blizzard's? Overwatch.
And also, don't forget, Gigantic from Motiga. That game is also another arena shooter that's super class-based with a lot of interesting abilities that kind of play into each other.
It was like a FPS MOBA before that was a thing in some ways.
Yep, absolutely.
Shadowrun came out in May of 2007. Its developer, FASA, shut down in September.
Mm-hmm. I played the heck out of that game.
Finally this week, our last email comes from Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style.
Hey.
From IGN Italia.
What kind of racist thing?
Hey, you're allowed to do that.
We can do it. We have a pass.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
He's a great guy.
How is the Scoop Crew planning on consuming House of Cards? Will you binge watch it over the weekend, pace it out, watching one episode a day or a week, or not watch it at all?
I have not seen a single episode.
Oh man, it's so good. I was just talking to my wife about this. Working at a place like IGN is dangerous. Like, you kind of have to get through it.
Yeah.
You got to get through it. There's going to be a grace period where people will be polite enough to be like, okay, have you gotten
That's
through this episode
like
yet?
A day or so.
It's exactly, yeah. But it's going to end. So
no, I'm going to destroy that show the night it comes out and the next morning.
Yeah, this Friday.
That's this Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then just feel like a big garbage pile after?
Yeah, I'll be fine. No. I'll go take a walk.
Maybe I'll start watching it with my girlfriend because we are both interested in it.
Oh, it's great.
I don't mean to say that we haven't watched it because we were like, we don't need that crap.
It's one of those shows where my wife got a few episodes in and was just like, this is yours, honey. And I walked away and I was like, cool. This is all mine. I'm going to marathon through this in one season. Then the second season I'll marathon through. Like, it's my show. I can do whatever I want with it. So
The challenge is, I don't know if I've mentioned on GameScoop before, that I'm a father fairly recently, fairly new. And so we can't, you know, just sit and binge as much as we want. We'll probably watch one a night. Watch one a night for how many is there?
Is your wife into it?
10, yeah.
Okay.
10 or 13 episodes?
13 episodes, I think.
So 13 episodes for 13 nights. That's probably how we'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Just give the baby some cough medicine. Set her down in bed, and then she'll sleep.
Is the cough medicine just some Jameson? Just rub it on.
Rub a little whiskey on her gums.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that used to be a thing, right? Is that still a thing? They don't do that anymore?
No!
I don't have kids. If I had kids and I said that, that'd be a problem. Look, if I ever have a kid, I'm going to ask you guys first. Now we got this out of the way. Now I know not to do that.
See? Ryan.
This is Baby Scoop. Learn things.
Let me ask you this. I've been rubbing whiskey on my kid's mouth to let them fall asleep. Is that okay?
Also, is it legal?
All right, I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. What?
You didn't answer. You didn't say what you're going to do.
That's what fiance and I are watching. That's our Friday night plan. I don't know how much of it we'll get through, but I'll get through the whole season as fast as we can, hopefully over the weekend.
I think he's waiting to hear if it's legal to rub whiskey on
your
child's
gums. I was curious about the House of Cards.
You can put whiskey on your own mouth.
Yeah,
you can do a lot of that.
It's my friend. Yeah, you want to do a shot? if you're going to PAX East, don't forget to come to the GameScoop panel, 12:30 p.m. on Sunday, next Sunday in the Arachnid Theater.
Yeah.
A spider party.
We spiders will be fighting. We need your help fighting a spider war.
True.
Come the packs.
You'll find me hiding under a table.
Good. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Vince. Thank you, Brian. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.